Welcome to Modern Figures Podcast, hosted by Dr. Jeremy Wasom
and Dr. Kyla McMullen, where we are elevating the voices of Black women in computing to inspire the next generation of the advanced technology workforce.
This podcast exists to highlight the stories of Black women in computing, to inspire high schoolers and the young at heart, and to dispel the myths and preconceptions about Black women in computing. Everyone, we are so excited to welcome Dr. Angelique Taylor to the podcast. Angelique is an assistant professor in the information science department at Cornell Tech, and she's the director of the AIR Lab, or the Artificial Intelligence and Robotics Lab. Angelique comes to us originally from St. Louis, Missouri. She has an AS from St. Louis Community College, where she focused on engineering science, and then went on to get two bachelor's degrees, electrical and computer engineering combined degree, I'm assuming, from the University of Missouri in Columbia, and then a PhD in computer science from the University of California, San Diego. After that, she went on to be a visiting research scientist at Meta Reality Labs, working on AI to support multi-user collaboration in augmented reality and virtual reality. And then she was a postdoctoral researcher at UC San Diego in the Healthcare Robotics Lab. She's done a lot of different internships and activities outside of those things, including being a research intern at Facebook's Artificial Intelligence Research, which, you know, who knows if it's still called that. And in her research today, she focuses on the intersection of robotics, computer vision, and artificial intelligence. So AIR Lab designs robots and augmented reality systems that sense and model groups of people in the real world, safety, critical environments, and also develops machine learning algorithms to support team collaboration. Some other stuff that Angelique has done includes serving as an artificial intelligence TA with Apple Incorporated. She was an intern at Boeing Company multiple times, and she's won a bunch of awards, including Google's Award for Inclusion Research, the National Science Foundation's Graduate Research Fellowship Program, Microsoft's Dissertation Award, the Google Anita Borg Memorial Fellowship, the Arthur J. Schmidt Presidential Fellowship. She's a GEM Fellow. She was an Aspirations in Technology Award winner for the National Center for Women in Information Technology. And most importantly, she is one half of twins. So she has a sister that we've met a while ago. It's been a while. So thank you, Angelique, for joining us and gracing the podcast with your voice slash presence on YouTube.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
I'm excited to be
Yay.
Here.
Yay. I'm glad we're able to have you. So I'm thinking back, like, when we first met you, I think it was in Atlanta at the NSBC conference. And I think maybe you were in, like, maybe your second or third year of your PhD. And I was like, this girl is on fire. She's like, I'm getting my PhD. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Like, even in your list of accolades show exactly that. Like, you were definitely on a mission. And I could tell, you know, at a very early time in your career that I was like, okay, whatever she is about to do, it's going to blow up. It's going to be very successful. And it shows, because you have a ton of accolades that are a testament to your hard work. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that. And we continue to see you, you know, across the years at various conferences and gatherings for computer science, and just seeing your star just rise. And, you know, it's cool to see you now as a whole assistant professor. Like, that is... It's just cool, because you don't get to, you know, witness many people's trajectories like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that I really appreciate. The fact that now when I go out to conferences, it's kind of like mini reunions, right? Like, get to see people you haven't seen all year or in a few years. And that time to really kind of catch up and see how things are going. Yeah, that's something that I really appreciate about you guys. Every time I see you, I get so excited. You know, little kid in me, you know, lights up. And so, yeah, very excited.
Oh, thank you.
And it's also been exciting seeing your trajectories as well. I mean, when we first met, you both were doing your PhD.
Kyla was probably done.
I got to see
I was already an assistant professor, but I think I was like maybe in my third year or something, third year. Mm-hmm. So still very much getting my feet wet in the whole what is this professor thing.
You had just crossed over.
I think I was a grad student when you met
But yeah,
me.
It's been great.
Yeah, Jeremy was still a grad student. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, when you became Mrs. NSBC / Mrs. IMCS.
I don't even know why I was at that conference.
She got roped into
I'm still to this day. Like, why was I there? Why was this happening?
I could probably still pull up that text message where you were like, Juan wants me to go to NSBC. Do I need to go to this?
Like, this has nothing to do with
me. I'm like,
me.
Yes, go. And then lo and behold. But back to you, Angelique. Like, so you've done a ton of things. You've been in lots of different places. You've studied a lot. Like, when you were growing up in St. Louis, like, was this something that you saw yourself ultimately doing? Was this always your dream? Or, you know, just how did you get here? What was early life like?
You know, growing up, I was a nerd. And everybody knew it. Me and my twin sister, we were nerds together. And I was very happy with that. Like, I loved going to school. I love, you know, the hard sciences. I've always kind of loved those classes. And I remember when I decided to actually get my PhD and I called my dad, he said something along the lines of, you know, this is the best news I heard all year, that kind of thing. And he's like, you know what? I'm not actually surprised that you're going for your PhD. And I was like, oh, why you say that? He's like, because even since you were a kid, like, you just love school. Like, I remember one day you missed your school bus. And, you know, most kids would be happy when their parents say, oh, you missed your bus. Just, like, stay home today. But you, like, no, you got upset. You're like, no, like, there's things I planned on doing in class today. Like, I have to go to school.
There is science that needs to happen.
Like, I have to go to school. And so he was like, I could tell back then, like, you know, you really enjoyed learning. And he always, like, my dad always encouraged myself and my siblings to, you know, go to college. He's like, you know, don't just stay in St. Louis just to stay in St. Louis. You know, go out, explore the world, go to college, go away and get experiences. And so I really appreciated him for kind of planting those seeds early on, because it really did impact my trajectory and how I thought about, like, my future. Like, it was always in my head, I'm going to college. And so, you know, when it was time for me to figure out my next steps after undergrad, and I had this epiphany with my dad. It was interesting because I was writing my personal statement and I needed some inspiration. And, you know, I was telling my dad, like, you know, like, what was it like growing up for you? Like, you know, how did you and my mom end up, you know, having, you know, such a big family? Like, why'd you start a family when you did? I remember my dad was actually studying STEM when he was in high school, and he was planning to go to University of Missouri Rolla, which is one of the top tech schools in Missouri. And, you know, some circumstances happened where he lost his full ride. And it was interesting because he was actually planning to study computer science.
Oh, wow.
And I did not know that until that moment when he told me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, wait, so I'm not the only one in our family that is interested in tech? Like, you were interested in tech. I thought I was the only one, you know. And so, like, all my other siblings are doing, like, you know, nursing and, like, are in healthcare. And my brother, he's in business, but he's always wanted to do technology. He's always wanted to be in STEM. And so he always kind of, you know, would say things to me like, oh, man, Angelique, I knew I should have switched. I wish I could be doing what you're doing, you know. And so, like, I thought it was just, like, me and my brother, essentially. And so to know that, like, my dad was interested in similar topics, I was just like, why didn't you tell me this? Like, you could have exposed this to me so long ago, you know? He was like, I don't know. I mean, with five kids, you know, you're working a lot, you know, you're just trying to make ends meet, honestly. And, you know, I didn't really know that you were interested in that. And I was like, what are you talking about?
You're like, I'm a nerd.
What do you mean? All nerds like computer science.
Like, right. Nerds need to stick together, exactly. You know? But yeah, so that was really nice to see that, you know, I got it from somewhere. I got it from someone, right? And because for a while I thought that I was just like an oddball, like, oh, okay, I'm just don't know.
But did you go to like any camps or anything? Like, was there? I know there were five of y'all, so camp is expensive. Or like, did you have any programs at school that leaned you in this direction?
No, not at all. There was a robotics club. But I didn't really feel like I fit in with the robotics club. It was, so I went to a high school where it's predominantly black students. There are also, it's very diverse too. It's not only black students, but then there's Hispanics, Bosnians. There's also Caucasian students, but most of the population is students of color. And so when it came to this club, it's kind of like, you know, this club was predominantly, you know, there's no black people in the club, essentially. And so when it came time to like explore clubs, I didn't really feel like I fit in. And then all the people that were in the club were not people in which I hung out with or saw myself hanging out with.
So they were super nerds. You were like, look, I'm a nerd, but I ain't that nerd.
Yeah. You know, yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know, my high school was a tech high school, and so we picked majors.
Yeah, you sound like my high school. Yeah.
So I started off with in like an architecture major, and I had this dream of like building my own house and designing my own house. But then I started looking at salaries. I was thinking very early on about salaries, and so I remember I looked at the job outlook handbook. For that year, and I was looking at the salaries for architects. I was like,
like,
I think I can do better.
Right. So, yeah.
And so I started looking at, you know, engineering, and I was already taking a circuits class. And so I decided to switch to electrical engineering. And so most of my classes were, you know, building circuits and learning about electronics. And I just loved that class so much. Like, that was my favorite class. I mean, it was so hands-on. And, you know, it's like we learn about the theory and then we apply it. And so it really kind of comes full circle. Whereas in a lot of my education, I felt like, I'm like, okay, we're learning about this. But, like, why do we care? Why do we need to know this? Right. Like, how can it be used in the real world? And that's why I felt like a lot of things that I even learned, like, didn't stick. Because I didn't know why it was important. And so later on, you know, going to undergrad, even in a PhD, you see like how these fundamental things that you've been learning throughout your education really kind of come together. And I wish that, you know, some of my teachers kind of made that connection for me, because I definitely feel like that would have helped in terms of retention overall for students. Like, it's really important to know, for them to know why what they're learning is important. But anyway, that was a big tangent. But
no, we like it. We want we want to know all of it. Yeah. So I feel like definitely what you said, like the practical application is definitely like even research shows, you know, the practical application of these skills and theories are what actually keep you there. Because like you said, no one's just learning for the sake of, oh, yes, this is a wonderful theory. It looks very pretty. Like, I need to know how to actually apply it in my life. So you mentioned that, you know, when it's time to come to go to college, then, you know, you stuck with the electrical and computer engineering. But before you got to University of Missouri, you started at St. Louis Community College. So there's a lot of people who feel like, oh, I have to start at like a big name university in order to do very well. Like, can you talk about like your experience at the community college and just, you know, how you transitioned as well?
Gotcha. So, you know, my decision to go to community college was a practical one. So I graduated high school with my twin sister. We were both going to go off to college together. And at one point, you know, she had a full ride to go to a four-year university But I didn't. And so I didn't want to take out loans to pay, you know, for large tuition. So I decided to stay home, go to community college, and get some of my general education courses completed. What I didn't realize was that community college, they have you take a placement test. And that placement test essentially determines where you start off in terms of your coursework. And so after taking a placement test, I realized to what extent my high school did not prepare me for college. I started off in pre-algebra.
Even at a tech high school.
And this class is like learning how to add and subtract and divide. And so, like, I felt just like so like insulted, like sitting in that class. Yeah. But actually, by the end of that class, I was actually learning new things. And that was what was most surprising to me. And so at first I was, you know, upset where I was placed. But then at the end of it, I realized, like, actually, I did need to start here because I am learning about math, even at its basic level. And it just got more advanced and advanced as I took more and more classes. And honestly, it kind of made me, like, I don't know, re-fall in love with math. Mm-hmm. Like, I just loved my math courses. And so I like community college. It was very close-knit. You know, after a while, you start seeing the same people in your classes. And you really kind of work together to get through the program in a similar way that you would at a four-year university. And I think the biggest difference between the two is that a lot of times at community colleges, you'll see, you know, older adults or, you know, people in higher age groups and your courses. And at first, that was something that surprised me. But after a while, it was like, okay, everybody needs to be educated. Like, who cares how old you are? And so, like, we started working together, like, no matter what our age group was. And it was awesome. And so we really, like, built, like, a little small, like, tight-knit community of people interested in engineering. And, yeah, it was great. Cool. I loved my time there. I was really involved with a lot of clubs and STEM organizations. We provided STEM scholarships for students that were attending community college and trying to help them financially. We did a lot of fundraising for that to help actually raise the money. And so it was great. Like, I had a really great time at community college. One regret that I have is kind of just spending too much time there. So one thing that I didn't realize was time just really flew by when I was at community college. So it's a 2-year program and I spent 4 years there. And so a part of me was kind of like, crap, now I'm behind, like, timeline wise, because I wanted to finish my undergrad at the same time my twin sister finished. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I wanted to finish together. But it just didn't work out like that. We went on 2 different paths, 2 different timelines. And so by the time I finished my associate's degree, my twin sister was finishing her bachelor's. And so ego-wise, it was kind of like a gut punch. But I was happy for my sister. Like, I was happy that she finished on time. Like, that is a great achievement. Yeah. I just felt like I was behind. And that's something that I felt internally. But now when I look back on it, you know, I never really compared. I feel like the society compares me to my sister, but I'd never really compare myself to my sister.
Yeah.
Because we just have totally different interests. So there is no real comparison. She's always been interested in healthcare and, you know, biology. And I've always been interested in, like, math and science. Yeah. And so it's just like comparing apples to oranges, essentially.
Yeah, that's often the case, though, I feel like, with twins, because you literally have a natural A-B test where it's like one person does, and they're always like, oh, well, you did this, they did do that. And, you know, it's like, okay, why are we, if they were just, y'all were just two other people just happened to be in the same class, nobody would be making these comparisons. But,
and then everybody has.
We have a lot of twins in my family, and that's like literally, they'll just don't let everybody do what
everybody
they
has their own, like, individual journey, too. Like, this is not I don't care how close you are to somebody, there's differences, right? Like, genetically, there are still differences, right? Mm-hmm. So the outcomes, the life experiences, what we end up becoming is going to be different regardless of how similar you might look, right? Or even behave. I feel like even just with siblings in general, like my brother and I are night and day. Like,
I wouldn't even think y'all were related have met if I knew us, you separately.
Like, met us both. And, like, we're less than 2 years apart. So, this, like, there have been multiple people who have known both of us, but not met us as brother and sister. And they didn't make the connection that we were brother and sister. That's how different we are.
Yeah. There could not be more opposite.
It just happens, right? And so, like, our paths are very different. And I think it's cool to, like, be able to say, this is just where the way that I went. And this is what I love doing. And we've had a lot of conversations lately about how time is a social construct.
Oh, yes. Time is a social construct. Like, and who would know, like, what is late?
What is late? What is early?
Right. What is on time? What, like, there's so many things that happen where you feel like, and whose time frame is this? Like, who are we talking about? Who is this model person that we're trying to strive to be on the same time as?
But look, right. I'm team Jesus. And so when it happens, it's because he said so. The end.
Hello.
The end.
The end.
So you went on to go, like, transition into a 4-year program after you did the 4 years at the community college. But you get to kind of, like, skip, right? Like, a certain percentage of those courses, right? Like, you don't have to take the first kind of 2 years of the 4-year program because you already have that fulfilled. So what was that like, kind of inserting yourself midway into and it was a combined program, like a EEC,
or did you double major?
Ooh. I double majored.
Yeah, you were like coming out the gates, two engineering majors at the same time. Holla at your girl.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so my transition to four-year university was pretty challenging. It was my first time away from home. And so I'm entering this small college town, Columbia, Missouri. And it's much smaller than what I'm used to in St. Louis, Missouri, which is a huge city. And, you know, it was a big culture shock for me. I went to a high school which was predominantly underrepresented minorities. I went to a community college. It's predominantly underrepresented groups attending. And then I go to a four-year university, which is a PWI. And so for me, it was a culture shock. I just wasn't used to being around that many Caucasian people, essentially.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, it was a culture shock. I was used to being around people that looked like me. And that was hard. That was, like, really hard. My twin sister stayed in Columbia and got a job. And so when I moved to Columbia, we roomed together.
Oh, nice.
And so that was nice because I felt like I had a piece of home with me. Yeah. And it was kind of like a reunion for us, right? We kind of reunited after living apart for 4 years. But, you know, it was challenging in many different ways. So it was a culture shock. And then all my classes, I'm older than everyone. Mm. So I have some classes where there's, you know, freshmen attending. I have some classes where there are students closer to 21. And I remember being in a class. I was in some lab. And my partner was the only other Black girl. And so I was excited to work with her because she was the only other Black girl. I was like, oh, yeah, let's work together. And at some point of our conversation, she asked me my age and she's like, oh, how old are you? I was like, oh, I'm 21. She's like, oh, you're old.
Girl.
Oh, no, you didn't.
No, ma'am.
So that was very, unexpected. Like, to be told you're old when you're 21.
Like, there are people in college who are 21, so that doesn't even make sense.
I'm like, this is the ideal age. Yeah. Like, this is your goal. Your goal is to get to where I am.
I hope you look like me when you get here.
Like, are you serious right now? And I just came from community college.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a freshman. I just came from a community college where there were literally like 50-year-olds right. in my class.
You used to be and one of the youngest.
And that was not a big deal. Right. Like, that was not a big deal. We are actually closer in age. And she called me old. I said, oh my gosh, what are you talking about? No, ma'am. I'm still young. You know? Yeah, so that was interesting. And, you know, I'm like the type of person where I'm used to, you know, forming groups, like study groups. That's what I did in community college, and I had success in my classes. I wanted to continue doing that at Fort University. But, you know, people didn't want to work with me. It was weird.
That
it was
is
like,
weird.
Why not? Like, can I join your study group?
Right.
You know? So it just ended up being that, you know, I just had to start my own study group. I'm like, whatever. I'll start my own. I don't need you guys.
Yeah.
So I would just form my own study groups. And that's how I would get through my courses. I never kind of tried to do things alone, mainly because I saw the people being most successful working in groups.
Yeah. You learned that early on. Mm-hmm. Is that something that some people don't ever learn? You know, they get used to just doing stuff by themselves.
You can't do nothing alone.
Yes, sir.
In life. You just can't. And so that was pretty hard transitioning. And so in my transition, you know, I realized that I was missing my people.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, where are they? I got to find them. And so... So then I started getting involved in student organizations like NSBE, and I wanted to include SWE, but SWE was kind of not as welcoming. So I kind of stuck to NSBE, and then started getting involved.
That was also my experience.
Yeah. Just to give an idea, there was one Black girl in SWE.
Wow.
Right down... the hallway is NSBE meetings, where it's like a room full of Black people,
she
right?
Made her
it's like nobody wanted to go to SWE. Why is that? Oh, because we don't feel welcome there. And so that was very much the case. Like I tried to go to a few SWE meetings. Nobody like wants to talk to you. It's like weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know where I'm not when I'm not welcome, so I just go to places where I am. You know?
That part.
Yeah,
I gave it a good try at two universities.
So research was something I did before I actually started at Mizzou.
Oh, nice.
So I applied for REU program while I was still at community college. So that I could do that the summer before I started at Mizzou. And so, honestly, I don't know how I learned about it. I didn't even know what it was, for real. I just wanted to get, like, some experience and make some money the summer before I started. And it just so happened to be this really awesome experience. It was a computer science REU. And I remember on the first day, so embarrassing now, but on the first day, so it's computer science REU. Mm-hmm. And I remember showing up and there was a bunch of students like waiting in the hallway to like enter in this room where we're going to do like introductions. And I remember like asking everyone like, hey, so this is a computer science REU, right? And they're like, yeah. I was like, so what's computer science?
You're like, what are we exactly here for? Just making sure, you know.
And I had no idea. And so once I knew that was programming, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I've done this before. But I didn't realize that's what I was doing.
Yeah, you didn't realize like, what I the buckets programming. Were. Because you did programming. Yeah, like, you did a lot of stuff at your tech high school.
Like, yeah.
That is so funny.
Yeah, so like in tech high school, I learned how to program. I think it was like Visual Studio or something. Mm-hmm. And then in community college, I also took a programming class and we were programming in C++, I think. And so I didn't realize that was like computer science.
Yeah. You were like, I just know how to do some stuff. So
yeah.
You're like, which so, bucket like, am I in? Because I have a lot of skills.
Yeah. And so, yeah, once I realized that's what it was, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I can pick this up. And so,
where was your RU?
Yeah, we were working. It was at Mizzou.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was with this, I can't think of the name of the lab, but I was basically working on problems where, you know how when, well, this isn't much of a problem now, but back in the day.
Back in my day.
Back in the day. There was this problem, or maybe it still occurs sometimes now, but there's often high, like, traffic, high throughput traffic whenever there are, like, popular topics in the media. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, like, the streaming services would be bogged down whenever a lot of people stream at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so we were working on this problem of identifying when these popular topics actually show up in the media, and then being able to kind of pre-cache videos relevant to that topic so that streaming services can prepare for high volume traffic.
Like a prediction model.
Yeah.
Was this your work?
So we're using, we were using latent Dirichlet allocation to classify popular topics in media using like online articles. So we're classifying text. We're scraping RSS feeds online, and we were building models to predict popular topics. And so, yeah, that was a really cool project. Ended up getting a paper out of it. Nice. And at the time, I didn't really even know what we were doing.
Like, we're doing fun stuff.
I didn't know. Like,
yeah.
And so I didn't know how I didn't know how hard it was to publish a paper. I didn't know what publishing a paper even meant. I didn't know why it was important.
That's a good thing. Like, you don't have a chance to get scared. Like, you have no one who told you, oh, this is difficult. You went in with, like, your honest, like, impression of it.
Yeah. And so...
Right. She's like, no.
I didn't know what computer science that was either. I was just there and...
Right.
And... And I also didn't know that I was using machine learning.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like I was learning all these things, but didn't know why they were important or how they all came together. And so after that experience, I joined another lab at Mizzou, the Remote Sensing Lab.
Was this with Elena Zaire?
Yeah,
she's
and so now she's at Florida.
Yeah, she's our associate dean for research. Is that, did I get the title right? Yeah. And facility. Jeremy knows everybody's title, by the way. I never know anyone's title. Project. Yeah. Oh. So what did?
Oh, she's building a lab. Oh,
helping to build Jeremy's lab. They built us a new building for our department. She's been instrumental in a lot of our crossover to and switch over to there. But yeah, what did you work on when you knew her first? So what did you work on with her?
Yeah, so I remember when I first met her, she was teaching some image processing course. And I looked up her research and was interested in kind of working with her. And I remember like not being sure if she was like a professor or like a postdoc. And so I remember greeting her and calling her by her first name. And I was so embarrassed when I found out she was an actual professor. I was like, oh my God.
You're like, sorry. I'm so sorry.
I was like, sorry. But anyway, so yeah, I was working on this problem for, I think it was for the U.S. Navy. And, you know, we had this data set of sonar images capturing the seabed. And we essentially wanted to build machine learning algorithms that could take these images as input. And we wanted to be able to detect if there was a sea mine in the image so that the so that people don't get blown up, you know? And so we essentially were trying to classify different types of seabed surfaces. Mm-hmm. So there was like sand ripple, Harpex sand, and some other one. And if we could essentially classify out these different textures, then hopefully the STEAM minds will essentially be highlighted even more. And so, yeah, that's the project that I worked on in undergrad.
You're out here saving lives with naval projects as an undergrad. Like, I don't think people understand, like, how rare that is to have that kind of impact at that stage of your career, your academic career.
Yeah, it was very impactful to me because, you know, we could potentially be saving people's lives, yeah, right? And so that's really important. And so the impact was clear.
That practical application. I remember, you're like, why am I learning this? Because this is how it affects somebody.
Exactly. And so the first year I worked with her, we were kind of, you know, exploring different classification techniques. And then the second year, I'd applied for the McNair's program at Mizzou because I finally decided to do my PhD. And I'm like, all right, McNair program can help prepare me for the PhD. And so, then the next year I did a full project with her and then, you know, wrote a paper afterwards. But I remember that last year of undergrad just being crazy with balancing like five classes. And then you have all these after school events with McNair. And then I had all my NSBE stuff.
And you're applying for grad school and you're taking the GRE.
Applying for grad school and the GRE. It was crazy. Yeah. So glad that's over. And so now when I have undergrads, I'm so like empathetic to them. Yes. Like, it's okay. I know you have a lot going on. Like, yeah, it's okay if you didn't make progress in your research. I totally get it. Let's just try to make it up later.
Yeah.
It was a lot, but definitely well worth it. In undergrad?
Yeah, for undergrad. After?
Ah, well, you know, so I majored in electrical and computer engineering, but I minored in computer science.
Oh, okay.
And so I took a lot of computer science courses. And at some point, I want to say after year like one or two there, I was just like, you know, I'm kind of over this ECE thing. I'm trying to go over there with the CS people. Cause I just love my CS classes a lot more. Like, they were so much more fun. Like, I'd rather debug than solder any day.
Yeah.
So, towards the end of my undergrad, I actually like was more interested in computer science than I was ECE. And so that's why I ended up doing the PhD in computer science instead of ECE. And then most of the research going on in ECE was like around, it's just like boring topics to me, like power. Yeah. How do you make a power grid? Like, who cares? It's a solved problem. Like, get out of here. Unless it's like solar power or some kind of new technology. It's kind of like, yeah, okay,
I agree. But why do we care? They don't have interesting applications, yeah, in my opinion. Sorry, no shade guys to any EEs. I know and appreciate lots of EEs. But I'm also, courtesy faculty over there. My first PhD student was EE, but we have an application of EE to computing that makes it make more sense. But yeah, I'm curious too, you know, so two things. One, you just decided to do this REU. Like, how did you find out about it? Because, you know, remember how, so... And so
I feel like someone told me about it, but
they were just like, come do this. And then, you know, you finished, you always knew that college was for you. And then I'm assuming that from your, like, your research experience, you decided, okay, the PhD is next. But did you have any, like, anyone who, like, steered you towards a certain program or set of researchers or a certain school, or were you just kind of out there applying everywhere and hoping? But there was a little stop at Notre Dame first.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's not on there.
Yeah, it was my first year, yeah, of my PhD I did at University of Notre Dame. So, yeah, I didn't really have mentorship for that. No one told me, like, who's who in the research area I wanted to explore. So that wasn't something that I even knew I was supposed to do. I just kind of randomly applied around and looked for people doing robotics and machine learning. And I remember because that last year was so crazy, I actually missed all the December deadlines because I was working on finals and making it public. And I remember feeling just like devastated, like, no, what am I going to do? And then I started looking at other schools and realized there were some later deadlines, later dates. And so I literally, like, after all my finals were done, I made a new list of schools and started looking at professors and CS. I also lived in ECE, but mainly CS. And yeah, then I just reapplied. And Notre Dame was a school that was reaching out to me, encouraging me to apply. I don't know how they found out about me.
There's a registry.
There probably is.
There's literally a name exchange program that you likely were in. Like different universities have, like, you know, students that meet a certain criteria. Basically, give us your top students that meet this criteria. We'll give you our top so they can, you know, ask each other students to come for graduate studies so they can find you. So I'm willing to bet that Notre Dame is in that group.
Yeah. So it's so interesting. I mean, by the end of my PhD, I had so much mentorship. But at the end of my undergrad, I didn't have much mentorship outside of McNair. Mm-hmm. And so in retrospect, it would have been nice to know that you're supposed to look for top researchers in the area that you're interested in. And really focus on the faculty member. That's something that I learned from McNair, but I didn't know that I was supposed to be looking for, like, the top people. It's like, where do you even go?
Yeah.
It's kind of just like a word of mouth type of situation if you don't even know about it. So, yeah. But it all worked out.
Yeah, you ended up in a great lab. Like, I was going to say, for you not planning, you know, you ended up in a great lab.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah,
so you get to Notre Dame, and you're even farther from home at this point. So what was that? Was that like a difficult transition? Because now you're in a whole nother state and doing something completely out of the box that you didn't exactly have all the mentorship for, you know, and then moving again after that. Like, what was that time period like? So I think we met you right when you were at Notre Dame. And now I think I can say this. I knew your advisor was interviewing, but I was like, I cannot tell her. Like, I'm not allowed to tell her that her advisor is trying to go somewhere else. But, you know, I hate that part of academia where stuff has to, like, you know, yeah, something is going to impact somebody's career, but yeah, it's like, I'm legally bound to not say anything because this is like a closed search. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what was that time period?
Yeah, like? And that was understandable. Yeah, that was understandable. So my first year, so I decided to go to Notre Dame. The other offer I got was from Washington University in St. Louis. So it's kind of like, go home or go away. Mm. And I did not want to go home. mainly because, I don't know, being away from home in Columbia showed me that being home is very distracting. Mm. So I wanted to continue to not have distractions. And so I went further away from home. Granted, I signed up to go to South Bend, Indiana, and I got a little taste of their winters during my interview. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know about this place. You see, like, big, tall mountains of snow in the middle of the street from, like, them shoveling. I'm just like, but where did all the snow come from? Like,
you didn't have that.
How is this possible? Are we in Alaska? Like, not that much snow. Okay. Not that much, no. The parking lots would literally have, like, big mountains, like huge mountains. It's like 3 or 4 or 5 people tall.
You got to plow it and go somewhere. It got to go somewhere when you plow it.
Yeah. And yeah. And so what was really cool about Notre Dame is, a side note, they have these heated pipes under their sidewalks. Yeah. And so when it snows, the snow melts.
Oh, that's good.
I was like, why isn't this done everywhere? Right. Like, this should be everywhere.
Michigan needed that.
But anyway, that was a side note.
That is cool.
But yeah, so I really liked Notre Dame. You know, I really enjoyed my time there. I built good community during that first year. And so at the end of my first year, I remember when this happened, my advisor sat me and my lab mate down. And she's like, hey, so we're thinking we're like in trouble or something. We're like, okay, what's going on? This is an unscheduled meeting. And we're like, she told us, you know, hey, you know, I got tenure at UC San Diego. And we looked at each other.
Wait, you we work at her.
And we're like, say that again. She's like, I got tenure at UC San Diego. We're like, the first thing we're thinking is, okay, what about us?
Right.
Right. We're like, okay, if you're going there, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And she's like, but let me just say, I want you to come with me. Right. Like, oh, okay. That's good news. But wait, if we come with you, we got to move again, you know? And so she's like, you know, yeah, so, you know, you guys can come with me. You just need to apply and you'll get in. It's not a big deal. And, you know, transfer your classes, all this stuff. So, like, I remember in a meeting feeling kind of anxious, like, crap, I have to move again. But then when I thought about it, I'm like, okay, we're moving from South Bend to California.
Yeah, where's the complaint?
So hold up, hold on. And so I was really excited. I was very excited to get away from that snow. I had no idea what San Diego was going to be like, never been before. And so it was literally like a shot in the dark. Mm. And we had 4 weeks to move.
Oh my God.
And so that was crazy.
That.
Yeah, 4 weeks to move.
Wow.
And so that's what I was saying. Like, I wish somebody would have told me earlier.
I feel like this is a theme.
I would have more
where you're
time.
Just like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to just jump into it.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you're in the ocean next.
Yeah. But, you know, my family didn't come start seeing me until I moved over there.
Mm. Okay,
they didn't come see me when I was in Columbia. They didn't come see me when I was in South Bend. But then I moved to San Diego. Everybody right. wanted to come see
everybody
me now.
Everybody popped up in
like,
San Diego.
Oh, okay, I see how y'all are. Okay, I see how it is. But yeah, so the transition was crazy. I mean, I was, like, freaking out looking for somewhere to stay. And it was a higher cost of living there. I was paying, like, $650 for a two-bedroom in South Bend.
Sounds and amazing.
I moved to San Diego and had to pay the same amount for one bedroom and a four bedroom apartment.
Was your stipend?
So I had three roommates.
Yeah. Was your stipend at least better to compensate for the cost of living?
I had NSF,
oh,
so
okay.
it's pretty much
so
the
it's
same
the
pay.
Same wherever you, yeah, wow. So yeah. You were balling, making it rain in South Bend, and then you over here spare some change.
Went to San Diego, and now I'm struggling.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah, it was a struggle.
I feel like they need a cost of living
honestly,
adjustment.
I think it might be
for these fellowships and scholarships, like especially for people in like New York and California.
Yeah.
Like there needs to be these cost of living adjustments.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Like, I feel so bad for my students now. I mean, the cost of living is even higher in New York City than it is in San Diego. Oof. And so when they complain about the stipend, I'm just like, I feel for you, but I can't really do that.
Right. The stipend
apply
is
apply for some fellowships. Like, that's the only thing I can tell you.
Yeah.
Apply for some fellowships.
Yep. Get some roommates. Get some fellowships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is it. So once you got there, were you able to like make the same community that you had made previously in in Notre Dame? Were you able to do that in San Diego?
Yes. So in San Diego, this is a way larger school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I ended up finding different types of community. So I had my off-campus community, which, you know, I would meet people whenever I would go places, and I have like my local friends, and then I have like my on-campus friends, but then there's levels to it.
Yep.
So it's like my lab friends, then you got your, you know, your group of Black friends, you know, then you might have like, you know, some recreational friends, like, you know, you see at the gym all the time, that kind of thing. So it was great. I mean, I had a lot of different pockets of communities I can tap into, and felt very well supported. And also there was large community of robotics researchers and faculty.
Oh, that's great.
And so at Notre Dame, we were like the only robotics lab. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to San Diego, where it's like 100 robotics labs.
That's great.
Like, wow, this is awesome.
Oh, that's perfect.
And so, yeah. And so that was another community, it was robotics mm-hmm. folks. And so it was awesome. I really enjoyed doing my PhD in San Diego. Sometimes I wish I could go back.
Yes.
But then also because it was San Diego. I mean, it's like a paradise. Well, after I did a year at Meta, mm-hmm. and then I started at Cornell and moved to New York City.
And you did a postdoc too, right?
Well, the postdoc was the same year as my year at Meta.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So I was essentially doing research still with my PhD lab mm-hmm. and then doing new research with Meta.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That was 2020?
Part of me wish I would have. Yeah. A part of me wish I would have went in person, but I don't know. I just didn't want to move like 2 years in a row. Yeah. It seems like a lot. Especially since I'm be going cross country.
Yeah, I've come to despise moving, but it's a lot. Yes, I have, and it was terrible. It was bad. It was real bad.
It's even worse moving in.
Yeah, we definitely cannot compare. But I'm just saying the act of moving in itself is a pain, such a pain. So I feel you definitely on that. So do you want to talk a bit about like what you worked on while you were at Meta? Are you at liberty to discuss?
I actually can't say too much about that.
That is fine. We can move right on along. NDA, NDA. Allegedly, she might have seen some things and done some things. The end. Bleep, bleep, bleep. So now you are the person who is the advisor. You're the one that has the power to move folks across the country. Like, I'm always interested in knowing, like, what was like one of the biggest like revelations or shocking things? Like, I call it the other side of the desk, like being on the other side of the desk, because you have been a student for so long and then now you're the person calling all the shots. Like, what was that like, you know, that transition?
You know, it was really interesting. I don't know. I kind of felt like it was kind of hard to, I don't know. It was, I don't know. I feel like it was hard in a lot of different ways. First, with respect to recruiting students. So I actually recruited students during the time I was at Meta.
Oh, that's good.
And the recruiting season came around. I wanted to make sure I started with students. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, first of all, it was like, okay, well, how do you interview students? Like, how do you know what, like, how do you identify a good student versus, I don't want to say bad student, but a not so good
suboptimal student.
Right. And so, like, how do you pick up on that in a 30-minute interview?
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't seem like enough time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and a virtual one, too. And so I found that to be really challenging. And then after my students started, it's like you kind of have to get on the same page with them, set expectations for yourself and for them mm-hmm. so that they know what to expect from you, right? Because what I realized was, even as a PhD student myself, I didn't know what this PhD thing was all about. for real. You don't really know until you do it. people can tell you about things as much as they want, but you won't really know until you do it yourself. And so I found it a bit challenging. There were some hits, some misses in terms of recruitment. Even after students kind of started with me, there were some misses. And so students have kind of come in the lab. Some students have left the lab. Rather suspect to like, their research is going a different direction that is not within my expertise or my scope of research. And then there are just students where they're interested in my scope of research, but maybe they're just like not a good fit in terms of the topics they want to explore. And so that was definitely some lessons learned in the first year. And so, yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out. And so now,
three, I think.
This is year two.
Oh, it's two. I don't know why I thought it was three. Okay.
Yeah. And so now we're about to do another recruitment season. Yeah. So now I'm like, okay, I need to come up with my interview questions, like figure out what exactly am I looking for to get out of this interview. Now that I've actually worked with students already, mm-hmm. I have kind of better questions I can ask now yeah. to kind of get at the things that are really important. But yeah, it's hard. I mean, with such a short interview, I mean, I might need to set up multiple.
Yeah. Also, we forgot to ask, how did you get to Cornell Tech? Out of all of the options, like what drew you there?
You know, it was a lot of things. I feel like I really wanted to work at a school that had a medical school nearby. Mm-hmm. And Cornell Tech is unique in that it has a lot of kind of energy and synergy around health technology. So there's like the health tech master's program. There's a lot of other faculty looking at topics at the intersection of technology and healthcare. And then the medical school is like right across the water. And so it's been awesome so far. There's been a lot of kind of energy with working with Weill Cornell. They've been really excited to work with my lab. We just did some recent deployments of robots.
Oh, wow.
And we deployed them at this medical event called Base Camp that Weill Cornell organizes every November. And they essentially invite healthcare workers from around the United States to come be trained over a two-day weekend. And so they engage in what they call simulation training. And they basically train them on how to treat a patient, how to use effective communication, how to actually perform various medical tasks. And we built this medical cart robot that stores medical equipment, and it delivers medical supplies to healthcare workers, automatically opening up relevant drawers. And so we had like just finished building this prototype like a week before the event.
Oh my gosh.
So we're kind of freaking out like, crap, we got to get this thing built. Got it built. We deployed it. Got some feedback. We essentially did like rapid user studies.
Yeah.
Because they had different simulations going on every hour. And so it was just a great opportunity to kind of test the external validity of some of the systems we're building, actually kind of get it in people's hands and see what people think.
Right. And how do they use
this
it?
This is something that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And so this event provides this opportunity for us where we didn't have to recruit people, we didn't have to pay people.
It's like y'all already
just
here.
Kind of just throw your tech in there and see how they handle it, right?
Yeah.
So it was awesome.
That sounds amazing. But the fact that, and I was just thinking about how, like, this literally leans on all of your experience. Like, the fact that you have actual robots. Like, there's a lot of people who do, like, robot planning, but they don't have the actual robots. The fact that you have, you know, this background with electrical, with computer, and your actual coding, the stuff that happens, like, this merging of all these talents that you've gotten, like, is perfect. Like, that.
Yes. My students did a lot of stuttering.
She said, my students did stuttering.
Yeah, my students. Yes. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess I never saw myself actually building robots, but that's what we're doing. We're building robots, and it's been great so far. I've been working with a lot of great students, honestly. I mean, I can't do any of this without them. So I really owe it to them. They, you know, pulling all these all-nighters, trying to get this robot built. Yeah,
it's good to have a good team. Like, there's, you can't pay for a good team. Like, you cannot buy a good team.
I'm trying to get my students to come up with a name. I'm like, okay, I need to get some excitement around this. Yeah. I think because I asked, like, after it was built and after we had already deployed it, I'm like, we should actually name it. Like, yeah. Name a robot. Because this is the third robot we actually built. And so we built two other ones. I'm like, we should name all of
right.
them. You know? So, yeah, still trying to come up with a name. I feel like we need some inspiration, you know.
I don't know if you can reverse engineer it. Name. One of my students came up with one of our system names. It's called Sonic. And then she just made the acronym fit. Like, she just made what it does fit the acronym. So maybe coming up with, like, if you want it to be an acronym, coming up with a cool name and then retrofitting it to the description to what it is.
Okay.
It's literally in a lab group meeting. Yeah. I was like, we need a name for this. And then at the end, she's like, I got it.
Nice.
We love it. It's perfect. So, okay. Another question I have for you is, like, did you find it difficult choosing a research direction? Because you went from being a student where you have, you know, your project or projects that you work on, but now you're setting a whole research trajectory. You know, how did you, you know, what was that transition like? Did you already have ideas and you were like, all right, these are all the things that I need to get to that I wanted to do in my PhD?
You know, it was a little bit of both. I felt like my PhD kind of scratched the surface of what I could have done or could potentially do. And I was really interested in pursuing like the direction I took in my PhD. And I wanted to explore healthcare robotics even more and more deeply. But most of the opportunities in industry, there aren't a lot of healthcare robotics companies. There's Diligent Robotics, that's in Texas. I think there are like three hospitals, probably more now. And they built this robot Moxie that supports nurses in the hospital. And that's probably the closest company that I could think of that matched well with my interests. But they're a startup,
yeah,
and they don't do research. So yeah, there's really no other route I could take to kind of keep working on these types of problems other than going in academia. And so that was a key motivation for me to want to stay in academia. And then when it came to kind of setting my agenda, there was so much more I wanted to do that I just didn't have time to do with my PhD. And so, like, now my students are working on all these problems and exploring even more problems than I you know, had initially come up with. And so it's been great so far. I mean, setting the research agenda wasn't hard. And finding students to work on these problems actually wasn't hard either, because students kind of see the value in improving healthcare, given our healthcare systems in the United States. And so... Cornell Tech is a graduate campus, so they have master's programs, 2 year and 1 year, and then they have the PhD program. Nice. So for each PhD program, PhD department at Cornell Tech, we have a home department back in Ithaca. And so that's essentially how it works.
It's like, can I speak to a grown-up, basically, is your whole campus.
Yeah.
No, that's really cool.
Yeah. So it's a lot of people taking hiatus from their jobs to come gain more training and bringing that training back to their jobs. And so that's what a lot of the students are like at Cornell Tech.
I love how your path dovetailed into healthcare, like the rest of your family. Like, I'm the tech person, but I'm going to go over here in healthcare too.
I know, right? I was fighting it really hard. I remember in my PhD, I just built this tracking system for mobile robots so they can track their teammates. And then I was like, okay, this is cool, but like, how's a robot going to use it?
Yeah.
So that's when I started to explore different applications and started to explore robots that can support healthcare workers, supporting teamwork in healthcare. So we looked at resuscitation and ORs. And that's when we initially came up with this idea of a medical crash cart robot. One of our participants actually came up with the idea. And then we just collected more feedback on the idea to figure out if other people were interested in it, and they were. They're like, actually, that would be really nice if the cart could just like navigate to the room instead of me having to go fetch it.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. And if it could tell me where the equipment I need is stored, that would be awesome, because we waste a lot of time kind of shuffling through drawers, don't know where things are. And even if it could provide recommendations at the bedside to help us with decision making, like, that would be awesome too. And so now all my students are working on these different problems, which are really hard problems, because we're dealing with an environment where there's often a lack of space, it's very loud, noisy from multiple people talking. And then a lot of times kind of legal issues come up, in patient care, especially with regard to, especially in like pediatrics, where you have a child.
Yeah,
they need a guardian that's there to approve any decisions they make. And if a guardian isn't there, they can either choose not to do anything because they don't have approval, or some people just treat the child and worry about permission later. It's kind of like a, you know, well, they're not going to be mad at us if we save their kid without their permission. But this could actually like lead to some legal concerns, right? And so it's this really complex environment. And we're trying to kind of integrate technology into this setting, which is really hard. I mean, a lot of people are kind of resistive. Like even at base camp, we noticed that some participants, like before they interacted with the robot, we told them like, hey, there's a robot. It's here to help you. And, you know, some participants were like, oh, man, AI is just taking over. Like, I don't want to interact with this thing.
Right. People think Terminator. They think then everything's going to just be taken over by robots. Like, it's like, hey, we're not there yet. Okay.
Yeah. And then after the session, they're like, actually, that thing was kind of great. I mean, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of...
It doesn't have a persona yet. You're like, but James is coming. James.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I mean, a lot of people kind of have preconceived notions about what a robot is and what it can do, what it's capable of. So oftentimes you need to prime. Yeah, have to prime them and say, hey, it can do ABC. It can't do anything else.
Yeah.
You know? To be very kind of clear about what it is capable of doing and not. But yeah.
Also, I've made up an acronym for James if you want to use him. Just in time, assistive medical support. Medical is the ME. So in case you want to call him James, I'm just saying. You see how easy it is to just throw out a name and then just like make it work. Yep, that's it. But Angelique, this has been so awesome. Like, we've known you, but we haven't had like this much detail about your story. So this was really great just to get to know you even more and like what you're working on and just like all the cool stuff and how you've come through this entire thing. So now I know once I encounter community college students, I'm gonna be like, talk to Angelique because she knows all the things, you know, but this has definitely been really amazing. And we definitely hope to, you know, have you back after you're doing more cool things. As you were talking about your research, I was like, man, this is such a convincing career proposal. Like, I cannot wait to see your career award because there's so many applications and this is the type of stuff that the National Science Foundation loves. So
awesome.
Yeah, and NIH as well. Yeah. Smart and Connected Health. I don't know if you've applied for that one. It's like a connection.
Yep.
It's
both just of them. Submitted a grant on that. Yep.
I love it. I love it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's, you know, I've been waiting for my spot.
Girl, we've been waiting to start some interviews. What's going on? Right, girl, we have a list, but we are two people and we'll be doing stuff. But no, you've always been on the list. Like, we've just, it's, the list has a very slow pace sometimes.
You know, you can always go to my website, angeliquemtaylor.com. I also have LinkedIn. And I don't know. I feel like I have some other social media accounts, but I don't really use them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
They can find you those two places. Yep, that is perfectly sufficient.
You want to know what's going on with me? Hit me up.
This podcast wouldn't be possible without our sponsors. This season is generously supported by NCWIT and CRAWP. The National Center for Women and Information Technology, or NCWIT, is a nonprofit community that convenes, equips, and unites change leader organizations to increase the influential and meaningful participation of girls and women in technology.
And the Computing Research Association's Committee on Widening Participation in Computing, or CRAWP, endeavors to increase the success and participation of underrepresented groups in computing research and education at all levels. As always, you can find us on our website, modernfigurespodcast.com.
Send your questions to askus@modernfigurespodcast.com.
And follow us on Twitter. Kyla is @Dr_Kyla, and I am @Jeremy Wasom.
Visit modernfiguresinc.com to learn more about our nonprofit organization aimed at promoting and engaging with women and girls interested in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and of course, computing.
Until next time, stay moisturized, hydrated,
mind your business,
and protect your peace.
Thank you.